Hey, we're getting ready for basketball season as we start week 9 of the College Football Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable Show. Brought to you by www.southbeachshopping.com, the online shopping network of the Philly Press Box Radio College Football Network. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host and, unfortunately, your technical engineer that had the wrong song playing. But I'll be here tonight along with my partners, college football national expert Terry House, and Penn State and Big Ten expert in the tackle on the 1994 Penn State offense, considered by many as the greatest offense in the history of college football. The Goon, Keith Conlon. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Good to be with you, buddy.
What's up, buddy? How are you, man?
Well, I'm doing okay, except for playing a little Sixers music prior to a college football show.
I'm not complaining about that. I'm not complaining about that. I haven't heard that for years.
Well, the good news, I guess, if you are a basketball fan, is the NBA does start tonight. So it's timed well, just the wrong song for this show.
Well, it's great.
All right.
We got 82 games before the Sixers get the first pick overall again. So
that's
Woo-hoo!
Right. That's right. And they'll probably only win 14 or 15 of those if they're lucky. All right, well, our www.southbeachshopping.com phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Well, fellas, we're down to two. We've been talking about this for weeks. We're down to two. Mississippi State and Florida State are sitting at the top of the mountain as the only remaining undefeated teams after Ole Miss went into Baton Rouge, and you guys were right on this game, and I was not. And they got knocked off from the unbeaten by the Tigers 10-7 in a defensive battle. But as we expected, the games are taking care of themselves, and there's a lot more to go. There are still 15 one-loss teams if you add East Carolina into the mix now as they're creeping up the rankings themselves, and we'll predict the outcomes of some of these games again later on, but also want to discuss the first Final Four rankings that will be put out by the committee here in about a half an hour, and if we can get those while we're on the air, we'll sure put them out there, and maybe we can even talk about it. But let's talk Penn State and Ohio State before we do anything else, because I know we all have opinions on this game. And, Keith, there's a lot to talk about, but before we get to the game and the officiating, I want to start out with the officiating, but before we get to that, I have to ask you, what happened to the case of sausage at the tailgate when the Big Eaters got there?
The pork roll.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That Philly Philadelphia Spartans Taylor ham, Taylor pork roll. I had a 5-pound box of that for the game this Saturday. You'll be happy to know it did not make it to the stadium. We saved it for the Maryland game. We had so many
people
and so much food. Yeah, we had so much food for this tailgate. It was like, you know what? We got 6 days until the Maryland game. We're going to hold off. I mean, pork roll has got a shelf life of like 14 years, so we'll be okay.
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to have more than about 14 minutes when the Big Eaters showed up, though.
This is true. Trust me, it's not gonna. It won't last about a half hour. Just as long as it's on the grill, is how long it's gonna last. So, Terry probably has no idea what the hell we're talking about, this Taylor ham pork roll stuff. So,
it's lost on me. Yes.
Yes, it's a delicacy out of Philadelphia and the South Jersey area. It's a, can't really explain it. It's a step below. So it almost like a spam, but it's the new bacon. It's used by everything in Philadelphia on everything. Burgers, pork roll sandwiches. It's one of the meats you can eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, as well as snacks. So.
Sounds good.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty seriously good stuff,
no doubt about it. Well, Keith, I'm going to throw you right on the hot seat, and let's talk officiating. The 10 points in the first half. Obviously, you can't take the points off the board. But when you only give up 17 in regulation and 10 were, we'll call them unforced errors, I guess. How do you recover from that?
You know what? I mean, we'll talk about the first thing first before we get to the officiating. Just the effort that the Penn State team put into this game, it was just unbelievable. Just very, very No one expected that effort today. They expected the effort, but they didn't expect that kind of outcome in that game. Take the Ohio State to a double overtime loss was beyond anybody's belief. And after watching that first half, you know, I mean, I know a lot of people in that stadium left a little upset, you know, saying, oh, here we go. But then the defense, it was just reminiscent of, like, I'm watching that defense, and I'm watching – it felt like I was watching the 2005 Ohio State-Penn State game all over again. And then when Mike Hall had that interception late in the game, I mean, all I could think of was shades of Shane Conlon running down the sideline in the Fiesta Bowl in 86. You know, just like, okay, I don't trust my offense. I got to get in the end zone because we're not going to be able to score. So that was just a great effort by the team. Offensive line played a lot better. I know that they got beat up a little bit, but you know what? They've been getting beat up worse a lot worse this year. Coaching, I thought the coaches stepped up their game a whole bunch. They've had a couple flaws this year, and they did a great job coaching and getting that team ready to play. But, you know, you'd never want to see it get to that situation where, you know, you can go back and say the referees did this, the referees did that. But, I mean, it just wasn't the two blatant calls. I mean, it was like late in the game and the bad spots of the ball. And then they go back and review the spot and they give them the spot, but then they don't put the 5 seconds back on the clock. It was minute 3 left to go in the game, and they rewind the clock and it says 58 seconds. That's 5 seconds. We're in the last minute of a football game. Like, they're huge. Huge things that happen. And it just didn't happen throughout the whole night. I mean, listen, I'm the first guy because there's nothing you can do. They're never going to change the app. It's never going to change. But it gets to the point where it's like, how many times is this going to happen over and over again? And you don't want to be like that team that complains constantly about the refereeing. But that game was bad. You know, it was about the referees when everything was over. And it was a great college football environment, just an unbelievable environment. And just a great game by two teams was being overshadowed by the refereeing right now.
I agree. I think we all knew going in that Penn State was outmanned. You know, they didn't have the team that Ohio State had. But I think I even sent you a message about this, Keith. Maybe it was even the next morning. Like, you know, this team just played their butts off. Absolutely, from start to finish.
Yeah. I mean, everybody did. Yeah, I mean, yes, they struggled on offense. I mean, on punting, again, I just can't believe they can't find somebody who can punt the ball more than 25, 30 yards. I mean, it's beyond embarrassing at this point now. But, I mean, I guess the guys are doing what they can do, and you got to play with what you got. But, you know, just a great effort all around. And, you know, I got to say, I mean, Joey Bosa, an animal, dude. We knew that going into that game. I mean, that kid's a surefire first top 10 pick in a few years, you know. Defensive end out of Florida. I mean, out of Fort Lauderdale, down by you,
yep.
Big boy. And then,
yeah, St. Thomas Aquinas, powerhouse
down
there.
He's unbelievable. Yeah, my brother had played with the Dolphins with his father and uncle. His uncle was Eric Kumaro, who was a linebacker there with the Dolphins and for Ohio State. And Joey Bosa's dad, John, was a defenseman at Boston College. So the kid's got pedigree. And, you know, I knew going in there to watch out for that kid. And he didn't disappoint. I mean, 2.5 sacks, fumble recovery, a bunch of different plays. And, you know, he's got Larry Johnson coaching him, too. So,
right. You know, well, he was good before Larry got there. He just ups his game.
Yeah.
But, Terry, I wanted to ask you what you thought about Penn State hanging around and you know, they carried the ball 31 times for 16 yards and they're taking a game to overtime. How does that happen other than the fact that Ohio State only threw for 74 yards themselves?
Yeah, Bill. I mean, first and foremost, I think Penn State, as I know you guys would agree with me, it's the toughest place to play in the Big Ten. I believe that. The atmosphere was absolutely electric and, you know, you see the whiteout, you see all the, you know, the fans that were just so fired up for that game. And the team was fired up, as you guys both pointed out. They were really keyed into what they needed to do, especially defensively. It didn't surprise me that the game was close. I think we talked about this prior to the game last week. I thought Ohio State might pull away at the end, but it was actually, you know, the opposite, where Ohio State kind of got out. You know, they had some favorable calls and, you know, they were a little bit more effective in the first half, but that defense for Penn State, and they've been good all year. They've had a few, you know, a few letdowns here and there, but, I mean, when you look at their total body of work, I mean, and especially in this game, I mean, they were absolutely awesome. The effort on both sides of the ball was tremendous. Offensively, as Keith pointed out, they continue to struggle with running the football. And when you're one-dimensional, it's very difficult when you play a really good team that matches up man for man, like you said, Bill. But I was just really impressed along the lines of what you guys said with just their, you know, tenacity, just their fire, just their will to compete with Ohio State, because like we said going in, the truth is they were outmanned. I mean, if you line those two teams up on a neutral site and they play 10 games, I think it might be difficult on Penn State. But being that they were there in Happy Valley and the crowd was electric and, you know, under the lights, that environment helped out a lot, and that defense was just absolutely tremendous. And, you know, it's a shame that they continue to struggle running the football like they do, because when I think of Penn State, I think of linebacker U, but I also think about, you know, all the great running backs that they've had there going all the way back. I'm not, you know, the oldest person in the world, but I remember Kurt Warner and, you know, guys like that. And it's just kind of a shame to see that they struggle so much running the football. But I know we talked about this a couple weeks back, and I said I'd like to see them get Lynch the ball a little bit more, and he actually had, you know, the most carries in this game. And I just felt like he was the more natural tailback that they had out of all those three, so it was good to see him get some more touches. But all in all, I mean, you got to give the guys credit for playing as hard as they did and competing. And, hey, they had a chance to win the game against one of the better teams in the country, and you can't ask for anything more than that. And I think, as Keith pointed out, the coaching staff did a good job having those guys ready. And, you know, Hackenberg made some plays. And at the end of the game, it's one of those things when I watched them play. You know, you mentioned that Ohio State only had 74 yards passing. You know, you always think Hackenberg's going to make a play. You know, when I watch that kid, the ball just comes out of there so effortlessly. When I'm watching him, when there's close games, I just think to myself, wow, something's going to happen. He's going to make a play. And they, you know, they were able in the second half to be a little bit more effective, especially, you know, in the fourth quarter. But all in all, great effort. You know, Ohio State is a really good football team, even though they too struggle, you know, throwing the ball, obviously. They've had some better games. But, you know, I think that was a testament to Penn State's defense and their game planning. But all in all, great effort, and I don't think they can hang their heads. I think we've all kind of, you know, spoken about this isn't really the year for Penn State. I think things are going to get a lot better. And it's one of those things where if you're Ohio State and Michigan State and some of these teams, you better watch out, because this is probably the lowest that you're going to see this team in terms of talent. It's only going to get better from here on out. And if you're a Penn State fan, like we said at the beginning of the season, you got to be excited about the direction of the program. And it hasn't been perfect, but once they kind of get back up and running there on the offensive line, and they're playing better, as Keith said, they played better in this game. But when they get the kind of personnel in there that they need to compete, you know, game in and game out with some of these elite teams, it's going to be really interesting. I think Penn State will solidify themselves as one of the top teams in the Big Ten and compete not only for Big Ten championships, but I think they'll be in the picture nationally, you know, here in the next couple of years.
Well, hey, Keith, Terry touched on something I wanted to hit you up on, and I'll just go and do that. You know, I as I've been watching Christian Hackenberg over the last few weeks, there's times I've thought, because of the pass rush and sacks that he's taken that you wish he wouldn't, and you know, he looks like he's struggling, and I've even thought at times I thought that maybe he was not getting any better, or maybe even going backwards a little bit. But daggum, when the situation comes where they need to drive the ball, to drive the field at the end of a game to make plays, the kid makes plays. He just somehow manages to get it done. And even when he sneaks by with one that looks like it should be intercepted, the next one is right on the money, and down the field he goes, and it looks like that look on his face looks like he knows he's going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, the kid's a competitor. He doesn't want to lose games. You can see him. They show him on the sidelines constantly watching the clock, the television, the big screens, everything that he has to watch. And he's always in the game. He's a competitor, and he can make every throw. And, you know, people will say he regressed. He's regressing in this now because he does look so lackadaisical back there, because it is so effortlessly. He can do stuff effortlessly, and it just looks like he's not following through. He's not stepping in the passes. But I'm telling you right now, the ball's come out of his hands pretty hard.
yeah.
You know, he'll have a couple bad plays here and there, but again, he's a 19-year-old sophomore. He's going to make those mistakes. He's a, you know, no one's perfect. I mean, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning at that age, they were throwing interceptions and not making right calls. And he's just, you know, he's our bell cow. You can tell that he, you know, he, as well as the rest of the offense, really fed off that defense. You know what? Say, you know, we got to score. We got to score for these guys. I mean, as a team, you know, you see one part of your team out there just crushing people and destroying people, you know, keeping you in a game that you start playing a lot harder, a little bit harder. You know, and then that defense out there, I mean, Anthony Zettel, I mean, my God, man. He's playing unbelievable. I mean, see, I know you're out in the West Coast there, or you know, you're out there, so I know you're looking at it from afar, but you're watching that game. You can't tell me that Anthony Zettel's not one of the top inside guys at 275. If that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's intercepting passes and running 80 yards, outrunning people, and just, you know, I think the defense just said, we're gonna win this game, and I think the offense took a lot of spunk from that defense, and they were just ready. It just turned out all right. I just really wish it had gone the other way, that they had won that game, but, you know, hey, you can hang your hat on a loss. That's the kind of loss you can hang your hat on. So,
Mike Hull's 19 tackles to go with that, Keith?
Unbelievable. And then you know, I know they gave Bosa the defensive player of the week in the Big Ten, but I mean, how can you hide behind 19 tackles, 2.5 tackles for losses, and just it reminded me of Puz Lusby in 2005. You know, his coming out party. So, I think Hull will start getting some national recognition from that game. And another guy, what's his name? Marcus Allen stepping in. I mean, I know that you guys know we're big Penn State fans, but story came out about Ryan Kaiser. Kaiser was the starting safety this year. He fractured a rib Thursday in a freak accident in practice, and actually had to have some surgery done, and had some fix up some stuff in his. Like it had torn into his bowel and had to get a surgery to fix a tear in his bowel today. So he's down in Hershey right now. So, but then, you know, Marcus Allen stepping up for him and playing very well. I mean, I think he had 8 or 9 tackles, two passes defense or whatever in that game, and was there for to make plays. That's a young kid out there. You can tell me that kid, he can only get better from what he was going through this past Saturday. So, hey, man. Like I said, the future is as bad as it's going to be in the next for a lot of years. So get your licks in now because they're going to have more and more talent every year.
Yep, it's coming. It's coming very soon. It's coming very soon, Keith.
Yep.
Hey, Keith, I wanted to ask you, since you have your finger right on the pulse up there, what has happened to Geno Lewis? You know, him and Hamilton together early in the year were on fire, and Hamilton continues to be, but Lewis has, I believe it's like 4 catches for 28 yards in the last 2 games. Is he losing playing time, or is there a problem with him?
I think he's definitely losing playing time. I know that coach had said something about his practice habits and stuff like that, where I've heard anywhere upwards from practice habits to downfield blocking, and just wasn't what they wanted, and it wasn't up to snuff for what the coaches wanted, and he's not getting playing time that he was before or getting plays called for him.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Because Deshaun Hamilton's sure taking care of his business, no doubt about it. He's on his way to a 1,000-yard receiving season already. He's really doing a heck of a job. He's at 686 yards on 57 catches already.
Yep, and, you know, I'm looking at, you know, opening play of the game, Zach Swinnack goes down and, you know, blows his foot, ankle up. I don't know what exactly he had hurt. I know it was his lower leg, but he's out for the season, so his career is over. The Kaiser's career is over. You know, guys are stepping up right now for it. And, you know, Akeel Lynch was definitely the guy who now him and Belton are 1-2. It's not 1-2-3. You know, Swinnack's out of the picture now. So now it's Lynch and Belton, and you could actually – I mean, they were running with a lot of you could say they had 19 yards rushing and stuff like that, but how much of that was sack yardage, in my opinion? You know, I thought
the official stats, Hackenberg lost 27 yards, so Lynch was 13 for 38 and Belton was 9 for 8 are the official stats.
And then one big one called back with that. They said that they on that clip late in the game, you know, there was a 15, 20-yard run right there called back. You know, when they had to make plays, they made them. So, you know, I can't be prouder of this team and how they played this past weekend. But it doesn't mean anything if you don't go out this – if you go out this weekend, you lay an egg against Maryland, everything you did last week meant nothing.
That's right.
So they really
as you
watch
and I talked the other day, Keith, there's no such thing as moral victories. Although you could sure be proud of the team. There's no such thing as moral victories.
Nope. They're still 4-3.
Yep. Well, I still do want to go back and Terry, let's get you on this. I mean, the officials were the officials, and it did turn into 10 points for Ohio State, and they only scored 17 in regulation. I mean, how at this day and age, and I've heard 100 stories, you know, all the way down to Beaver Stadium is not equipped with up to date technology as one excuse, but how can this possibly happen while everybody in the world sitting there watching the ball bounce on the ground and the press box can't have that video?
That's a good question. I can't really answer that. I mean, you know, what was the official response from the officials? Did we get one?
Yeah, the officials said that they had lost all angles except for one. The only view they had that was working, they said, was the overhead view. Now, how do you tell from an overhead view that the ball hits the ground?
Yeah, you can. And you know, you're in a situation like that, they always revert back to the call on the field, right? So
yeah.
Brad Nessler and Tom Blackwood sure showed it to us about 100 times, and it bounced every one of them.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, for Penn State to fight through all the adversity that they had, you know, with just a tough first half in general with some of those calls, and for them just to put themselves in a position, I mean, you can't really, like Keith said earlier, it's hard to speak on the refs and calls. And, yeah, I mean, you know, from a technologically standpoint, I mean, you would figure that they would have everything buttoned up, but, you know, at the end of the day, there's not much you can do about that sometimes. I mean, have you ever watched a Pac-12 football game? Have you ever seen those guys ref?
Yeah, they put more and more guys out there to referee, and they still can't get it right.
They're the worst.
I guess my thought about the officiating is I agree you can't do anything if guys are calling holding and doing whatever, like they did in the Eagles game that was just about unwatchable on Sunday. But here's two calls that were on replay for you to look at, and you didn't get them right.
That's frustrating. That is frustrating.
Yeah. Hey, Keith,
the field goal gets me. I mean, the field goal delay a game, that's a heavy 3 seconds without looking at that clock, and that clock is a zero for – I'm not talking that, like, you know, that 100th of a second where, you know, it hits zero and then you have that extra second. It was a 3 or 4 full seconds. You know?
Yep,
that's
absolutely.
A 49-yard field goal, I believe. You back that kid up 5 more yards, Urban Meyer's not kicking that field goal. He's not going to do
right.
it. He's not going to have that kid attempt a 54-yard field goal. It's just not going to happen. Now, does that change the complexity of the game and how everything was coached in that game? You know, Ohio State went ultra conservative in that second half. I mean, they weren't throwing the ball downfield whatsoever. You know, they were just really, really conservative in how they played that game. So, I mean, again, those bad calls, yes, it is what it is, but does it change the game, you know, in the second half if the score is 7-7? Yeah, you know, it's a whole different game. You know, so it's just one of those things. And I'm ashamed to say it, but I'm sort of getting used to it, you know. I mean, how many times has Penn State on the losing end of this stuff? It's just like, and I hate to be that guy. I don't want Penn State to become that program that constantly complains, constantly. Oh, it's the referees, you know. Hey, they're playing with the same referees, but are they really? Are they? I don't know.
Well, let me run this fact by you, Keith. Maybe you don't know. If you remember, there was a game in 2002, and I'm sure you probably remember this, but Joe Paterno went absolutely out of his mind after losing to Iowa in overtime and chased the referees off the field. What would you think if I told you the back judge in that game was the exact same back judge that was there Saturday?
I've heard a lot of that stuff, man. I have heard
That's
a lot
a fact.
Of that stuff. I've actually heard that O'Brien guy, who I believe it was O'Brien who did the refereeing, was actually quoted to one of the players a couple of years ago and said, "Shut your mouth, you're lucky you're playing football this year." I mean, I don't know if that's true or somebody's making that claim or anything like that, but, you know, unbelievable. By the way, is the back judge in charge of watching the clock?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, sir. I would like to think we're 12 years later that it's surely coincidental that it happens to be the same back judge. But it is the same back judge.
Wow.
What can I tell you? Well, hey, all said and done, probably it was a moral victory. I guess we'll call it that for our sake. It's not going to be called that in the locker room, but I think everybody can be proud of this Penn State football team.
No doubt, my man, no doubt.
Well, Terry, let's talk. Let's move on to the next batch. Let's talk Temple House. They're being brought back to reality with their back-to-back beatdowns to Houston and UCF, and East Carolina is coming to town this week, and they're going to be able to survive that run and get bowl eligible. And along with that, Villanova, they keep winning. They've moved up a notch now in the rankings to number three in the nation with their 48-28 win over Morgan State. Let's start out with the Owls.
Yeah, so Temple, I mean, a couple weeks back we looked at their schedule and we said, well, we're going to find out a lot about this team in the next coming weeks, and we're finding out that there's still a long way to go, right? I mean, but that's, in my eyes, it's okay. From where they were at last year with the new coaching staff here, getting things settled, they're starting to be more competitive. I know the last 2 weeks have been a little tough, but, you know, they started out 4-0, and they've had some struggles here, but, you know, 182 yards of total offense against UCF's not going to get it done. You know, they struggled on third down. I think they had four turnovers, and I think they gave up close to 470 yards of total offense. So, again, I think it's really a process with these guys, and, you know, they're not where they need to be to beat some of these top echelon teams, which they're facing now in the UCFs and the East Carolinas of the world. I would imagine this week's going to be pretty ugly. East Carolina's a really good football team, as we know. But, look, you know, they're getting better. They're making progress, and there's really – they have, I think, two real chances to get to that six-win plateau, and that's – they have Memphis and they have Tulane. They also play Penn State and Cincinnati, and I think there's one other team on there. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But obviously, Penn State's going to be tough. Cincinnati's going to be really difficult. Well, I guess it's actually East Carolina. And then they have Tulane and Memphis. So if they want to get to that six-win mark, they're going to have to beat Tulane and Memphis, and that's probably their best chance. But all in all, yeah, I mean, it's been tough the last couple weeks, but they're making progress. Last year they won two games, and they have a chance to get bowl eligible if they win a couple of these in the next five. And you can't really ask for more than that, you know, as this young staff kind of puts things together. So on the Temple front, you know, I think it's still a positive thing in general. And, you know, when you come in and you're putting pieces together, it's not really about, you know, that season or two seasons. It's about the program. It's about putting the right pieces in place, building the right infrastructure, getting the right kind of people in and around the program, and they're doing that. And these guys are – it's a good coaching staff, a hungry coaching staff, as Keith's pointed out, because he's obviously friendly with them. So I think they're going to – you know, I think they'll be one of those teams that will compete with some of these other teams in this conference here, you know, down the line, but it's going to take a little bit of time. Villanova, as you mentioned, yeah, they made it through one more week again, and you know, pretty much coasted. They have Richmond this week, and Richmond's also ranked, I believe, and they're a pretty good football team. They've had a pretty good history of playing good quality football at this level. So Villanova had this game, and then after that, I would imagine we're not going to see any more ranked teams through the rest of the season. So as they're ranked number three, you know, they get past this game here on the road. Again, it's going to be tough, but once they get past here, it should be smooth sailing until we get to the playoff. But, I mean, again, Philadelphia football, talking college football in Philadelphia, that's a cool thing. And both these programs are playing, you know, pretty good football. So, you know, as a guy that's, you know, that's kind of following it here now that because we've been talking about the local teams here, it's exciting to see both of them having, you know, some success. And we'll see. I'm really rooting for Temple to get to that six-win mark. I think that'd be something for the players and for the coaching staff to get there this early. And so we'll see what happens here in the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, I'm excited about Temple, too. I'm hoping they can at least get to that 6 or 7 wins and get to a bowl. It would be fantastic for Matt Rhule and the guys. And Keith, I know you'll be excited about that.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, Matt's a great guy. I mean, I say it every week. And, you know, you do want, you know, and we say bowl game is a reward for the players and stuff like that. But, I mean, as a program, a bowl game is 15 more practices,
yep.
15 more days to go out and get better. And that's the biggest thing. I mean, people talk about, you know, Penn State being sanctioned with no bowls, but that was a huge thing. Not having those practices when you were bowl eligible was a big thing. That the only time you practiced was from Thanksgiving, you were done until spring football, and you had 15 practices until your next season. So, that is a huge thing when you make that bowl. So we shall see. I mean, I hope that Matt can get it done. I think Matt will get it done. So we'll see.
I'm with you. And by the way, speaking of Villanova, I throw a big number out every week when we talk about them. This week it's 514. That was their total. That was their total yards for the week.
Wow.
An average, but they got to be at around 500 yards every week.
Well, what's really interesting about them, Bill, is how balanced they are. I mean, we've had weeks
mm-hmm.
where they've thrown the ball for over 340, and they've had weeks where they've rushed the ball for 300 yards. And it's not just one rusher. I mean, they have multiple backs that they utilize. So they're a balanced team. They're going to be tough when they get into the playoffs.
You're exactly right. This week they ran for 364 yards, and this John Robertson's a heck of a player. He rushed for 99 and he threw for 143 and scored two on the ground and threw for three. Have a day, son.
Yeah. They're a good team.
All right. Well, let's talk to mention our sponsor here. We've got a place if you're into online shopping. You can do all your shopping from one location and get cash back on your purchases from over 3,000 stores. It's a South Beach Shopping Mall without walls, and it's simple to do. Go to www.south-beach-shopping.com and click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in, register to become a preferred customer. That's it. You're free to look around at all the products and click on the all stores tab and check out all 3,000 plus network stores by alphabet. All the big stores are there. It's a great opportunity to get cash back and even comparison shop. And best yet, it's free to register. If you have any questions, click on the Contact Us tab on the homepage or click on your shop consultant, South Beach Shopping, to leave a message. And I can tell you this, by the way, fellas, I actually used this today. I needed some things from Staples for work, went on, placed my order, got 4% cash back on my order, and within about 15 minutes, I got a message that it was ready to pick up, drove over and picked it up, and got 4% cash back. Free money. So it does work.
Nice.
All right. Good to know that the things that we advertise are for real, and they do work. All right. Well, as we speak, we're at 7:32, and the top 25 Final Four show, whatever we want to call it, is going to make their announcement of the Final Four and put together by the committee. It'll be on ESPN Live. And I guess I want to ask you guys, Keith, you and I looked at a very interesting article today, but I wanted to ask, first of all, about the – you know, is it even necessary, other than it's ESPN, to put this kind of thing on the TV? I mean, we're at week 9, week 10.
Mm-hmm.
What's this all about? Is it just the stuff?
It's just selling more advertising and more marketing. You know, it's Tuesday night in the fall, so there's not really much going on right now. So they figure they could have one night. Now, if you want my personal opinion, I think the NCAA is conceding Thursday night to the NFL. I think the NFL is taking over Thursday night, so these big games on Thursdays. We're not going to see them in college anymore. So, you know, they're bumped back to Tuesday now doing this show. And, you know, the article, I thought you were on that list today, but it's the article from Rolling Stone that Bill is talking about. And the SEC's biggest cheerleader being the ESPN. It was an unbelievable. It's an unbelievable article, and it's exactly what I have been saying, and a lot of people have been saying for a long time that, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about all the one-loss teams, but all the one-loss teams were loaded up with the SEC right off the get. You know, everybody's worried about 1, 2, and 3, but you know, Bill's a smart guy. He says, you know what? Look at all these one-loss teams. They're going to be in the top of the pile when they're going to be in number three and four, but in the year, if not 2, 3, and 4. And here we go. It's, you know, how many SEC teams are going to get into an ESPN run, ESPN broadcasted, ESPN this, ESPN that? You know, we're sitting there looking. We're in that situation right now where they own everything. You know, Chris Fowler has to go on Twitter. Wow. Chris Fowler has to do this.
Well, let me interrupt you for just a second because
yep.
I'm looking out of one eye. I'm looking out of one eye. And Michigan State is 8, Kansas State is 9, Notre Dame is 10.
Huh.
And TCU is 7.
Yeah, Notre Dame
is 10.
That's brutal. That's bad. I guess Condoleezza Rice. I guess she hasn't been watching Notre Dame play.
Yep, they haven't announced the top six. They haven't announced the top six yet, but that was 7, 8, 9, and 10.
Bill, I was expecting them to come out and say the top 14 is the SEC.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, let me ask you, Terry, I don't know if you heard this, and it's actually in the article, too, that Keith's talking about, but I was going to bring it up anyway, about Chris Fowler actually going on and defending ESPN, that is not good for them to have just SC teams in here.
Yeah, I didn't see him say that, but I've heard many conversations in and around this, and it's actually the SEC is the most
Terry.
Okay.
Number one, Mississippi State. Number one, Mississippi State. Number two, Florida State. Number three, Auburn.
Yeah.
I can pretty much guarantee you who number four is going to be.
Alabama.
I can guarantee you knew.
Yep.
Right. Alabama's got to be four, and Oregon's got to be five, right?
I would, yeah.
Well, where's
yeah.
Ole Miss?
Ole Miss
might
be six.
Five. Oregon might be six. It's a joke.
Yeah. Well, they're going to another commercial.
Joke.
Well,
Terry, go ahead back to it.
No, I interrupted you there.
I
actually heard the same argument where they were talking about, you know, maybe some of the other conferences, you know, having to play a larger role. Because, look, the SEC, there's so much fanfare already. So, I mean, just promoting it even further, I mean, it's not like it's going to elevate the conference any higher than it already is in the eyes of, you know, college football fans around this country. So, not having the Big Ten with the high – oh, my goodness. Ole Miss
is not, four.
So you know Bama's going to be – oh, my gosh.
Not having
– Oregon, Alabama.
Yeah,
well, Ole Miss and Auburn play this weekend.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Man.
That's very interesting. Anyway, Bill, I think it would be better for – I do believe that it would be better for ESPN and, you know, some of the other networks if – there were other conferences that were a little bit more, you know, in the limelight, if you will. So, is that kind of what they were talking about? Is that what you were saying? Was Fowler talking about another one of these conferences? I mean, helping the SEC and helping college football by kind of rising to the occasion. Is that what the article was talking about, or the tweet?
Yes.
Well, no. What he was actually saying was that the best thing for ESPN would be to have all the conferences represented so that everybody in the country would be watching. So let's say, for example, Oregon's in. Well, then you get the West Coast people, and you need a Midwest team, and you need a Southeast team. And, you know, but the thought being that there's some areas in the South that aren't big market areas. So what good would it do to have a Mississippi playing a Mississippi State?
Nope, I understand. Yeah, that makes obviously complete sense. I actually didn't see his tweet, but that makes complete sense. So he was defending ESPN by way of that argument, which, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good argument, actually, because the footprint of the SEC, like you said, is so small in comparison. Look, the Big Ten's got the best footprint in all of college football, if you're talking about it from a television standpoint.
Yeah. Well,
right. Now that they have that New York area with Rutgers as well.
Absolutely.
And DC. Well, why can't we just figure this whole thing out and make a freaking 16-team playoff like every other
They won't go that far, Keith, and you know why.
Well, there's too many bold people losing money and too many, you know, I understand. I mean, you can do it. I mean, it can be done. If you want to fix it, it can be done right. But they don't want to fix it because there's too much money involved.
I'd be happy with 8. As I've stated before, I think 8 would be a good number. But so, Bill, are we going to talk about this Final Four that they just put out?
Sure, go ahead, have at it.
Yeah, I think my first question would be, and I'm not listening to it, but my first question would be, you know, what is the methodology in this? Are they saying that right now they feel these are the four best teams in college football? I would imagine that's what it is. But even with that premise, I don't really, after watching all these teams play, I'm talking multiple times, I find it hard to believe that they feel Mississippi State, Florida State, Ole Miss, and Auburn are the four best teams. That's my opinion. I think you could remove those bottom two for sure, and possibly move Oregon or even Alabama in. Though I would probably, if I were doing it, I'd say Mississippi State, Florida State, Oregon, and Alabama with Notre Dame just on the outside looking in. But that's me.
I just can't believe that Notre Dame's 10.
That's ridiculous.
No.
That's
hard
most
to believe.
I'm not a Notre Dame fan. You guys well know that very much. But how in the heck can they rationally say that they're the 10th best team in this country? That's just unbelievable.
I don't agree with this.
I'm 100% with you. Their schedule warrants more than that, if nothing else.
It's just ridiculous.
I don't know. I mean, I guess all you got to hope for is that it keeps sorting itself out, you know?
Well, it will, Bill, because Ole Miss and Auburn play this week.
Right.
Yeah,
and
Mississippi State, Ole Miss.
And Auburn
Alabama.
Still has to play Alabama, and Alabama has to play Mississippi State.
Yep.
So
yeah,
they could all still end up with those couple losses we've talked about.
And to go back to your question about the relevance of this show, I thought about it earlier, and I thought to myself, well, it's kind of cool, you know, just to get it out there. But the truth is, who cares what they think about right now? It has no bearing. All they're doing is setting themselves up for, in the minds of a lot of people, for failure. Because what happens if they have, you know, say they have four teams going into the last week, and all the teams win, and then all of a sudden, based on someone having style points, they end up moving someone in there that was on the outside looking in or something. It's going to present so many issues, I think, for themselves, for the committee itself, by them starting so early with this. And then, I mean, why not just let it play out and just do it like the NCAA tournament does, which is they all sit down at the end of the season and they just let you know at that point. I mean, I think I understand it's about the money. It's about, you know, the celebration of it all, which is fun. It's cool. But, you know, I mean, it's a little bit overdone, I guess, now that I think about it. What do you guys think?
There was a story I wanted to share with you guys. I don't know if you watched much of this game. Last Thursday night, Miami was playing Virginia Tech. Did you guys get a chance to watch that at all?
Yep.
Or much?
Yep.
Keith, they started this conversation out about probably the third quarter when Miami was starting to put the beat down on them pretty bad.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, they start talking about Ohio State. And they're saying, well, if Ohio State were to beat Michigan, now take away the Penn State game because everybody thought that was going to be a rout, but if they beat Michigan State, the first game of the season loss to Virginia Tech, their only loss of the year, and Virginia Tech is now a bad football team, is that going to go against Ohio State in the rankings? And I thought to myself, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Where was Ohio State ranked, Bill?
I think they were 16th or 15th, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay, so the highest ranking Big Ten team is Michigan State at 8?
7.
Yes.
7. Seven. Okay, that's tough. Oof.
Yep.
No, actually, I think you were. I think it was 8.
Yeah, it was. TCU was 7.
Yep.
That's tough.
But I just, you know, I'm thinking to myself, not that I'm a big Ohio State guy by any means, but, you know, they went into that Virginia Tech game with a brand new true freshman quarterback, right, with they had just lost maybe the best player in the country, a quarterback, or at least one of the top three or four best players in the country. They come in with a freshman quarterback, and they get beat opening day, and now let's just say they run the table, but because now Virginia Tech is perceived to be a bad team, that keeps you out of a chance for a championship. It just doesn't seem right to me.
No.
It's just bad. I mean, everything about this is wrong. Everything about it is just, man. I read that article today, and I was just like, this is exactly what we've been saying. It's just how it is. I mean, I just can't see Michigan State beating Ohio State. Oh, I can't see Ohio State. Whoever wins that game November 8th, whoever wins that game is going to win the Big Ten. I know that. I just can't see this top four not having a Big Ten team in it with the amount of money that it brings to the table. And that's just, I think in the long run, money will prove to be the big player in this. And you're talking about the Pac-12 getting a team in because they have to have the West Coast viewers. we all know what runs the NCAA, and that is money. So we got to take into account the money will play into this eventually, in my opinion. I'm obviously slanted and can't stand the way this thing is. I mean, it's just it's so political and just pathetic, but, you know.
Yeah. But, Keith, you know, the good thing about this is it doesn't even matter because there's a lot of football to be played. And
well, there's no doubt. I mean, I would love that I take this right now and then watch this on this January 12th and see what changed.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I know Alabama's going to – I think Alabama's going to win the national title. I said it earlier this year. I'm still with them. I think they're probably one of the best teams in the country. So, I mean, they can do it. They have the ability to do that, to knock all those teams out. Ohio State or Michigan State is not being put in that situation to do that, and they had the same amount of losses.
Well, I think, too, you have to look at some of these other teams that are sitting there, you know, Michigan State, Kansas State, Notre Dame. Let's say these guys all run the table, and they're all sitting here with one loss. I mean, how's Notre Dame going to leapfrog five teams, six teams, to get to number four?
Well, they won't have
to. All they can do is win their games. You know, that's all he can do is win the games on your schedule.
They won't have to, though, because they're going to – a lot of those teams, they're playing each other, so they're going to cannibalize each other. So out of the SEC,
read the Rolling Stone article, Terry, because in that article it states exactly that, where they build up the SEC to the point where if they beat each other, they don't fall very far because they're already saying, well, you already lost to a really good team. So you're not going to fall very far.
Right, but a two-loss SEC team is not going to get in over a one-loss Notre Dame team, especially if that's the second SEC team that's vying for that position. So,
one would certainly hope not.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really – I guess I'm not going to get too fired up about this. I mean, it's concerning. It's concerning to see that there's that much, you know, emphasis now on the SEC, you know, but they're going to cannibalize each other a little bit, so – We'll let it play out. Like I said, I would have, if I were doing it based on what we've seen so far this year, I think you'd be hard-pressed to keep, you know, Notre Dame out of that top six for sure. I think they deserve that. But Mississippi State, Florida State, Oregon, and, you know, I'd put Alabama in there over Ole Miss and Auburn. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Mississippi State loses the game. How far are they going to drop?
They'll drop to five.
Yeah, I mean,
and then they
beat Ole Miss in the Egg Bowl, and then they, you know, they're back in it. It's just,
right. What did you guys think about TCU tossing up 82 this week?
Yeah,
I mean, how many style points do you need? And apparently, it worked because it got them all the way up to seven.
Yeah,
they ran out of fireworks.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
Well, yeah, I mean, what I guess, you know, I learned many, many years ago as a coach, and when I was at a coach's clinic one time down here, and there's a guy that was coaching at Bradenton Manatee, Joe Canan. He's a football legend down here in Florida. And Joe was speaking at a clinic, and he said, somebody asked him about running up scores or whatever, and says, it's not my job to play defense for you. Mm-hmm. And I've never forgotten that. But doggone, I mean, you're still throwing, four or five touchdowns, I believe they threw in the third quarter to get them up to, like, 68 points, and they're still bombing away.
Was there some kind of issue between Kingsbury and what's his name over there at TCU?
Oh, I don't know. I just think they were playing for style points.
82 points is a lot of points.
That's an awful
lot
of points.
Yeah, that's definitely some recruiting battles going on there, buddy.
Yep. All right. Well, listen, I'll tell you what. We were going to talk some Heisman, but unless we could do that quickly, let's just jump over and talk about our picks for this week and last week since we've got a lot of games to pick. Last week, Terry, another 6-1 week.
Watch out.
So you were 6-1. I was 5-2. Keith was 4-3. So the gap between me and Keith is getting a little wider. But Terry, you're closing in on me just a little bit. I do have to give you guys your props. So you both took West Virginia at Oklahoma State, which I was surprised only because Oklahoma State was home, and you both took LSU against Ole Miss, and. You both won that, but then you both took USC, and I took Utah at home, and I won that one back on you. So good week with a bunch of us picking different guys, different teams.
Yeah,
so right now I'm 41-16. Terry, you're 39-18, and Keith, you're 35-22. Still respectable.
I'm a happy 35.
My man, if you had money on it, for sure. All right. So this week, you ready for this week's games? We got a handful of them. Who's up first this week?
Me.
Okay. Keith, Terry, Bill, we got Maryland and Penn State.
Ooh.
It's Maryland's Super Bowl, but I don't care. It's just like Rutgers. They're still going to get over that hump beating Penn State. It's not happening this week. Penn State.
Yeah.
Terry.
I'm going to go Penn State, but it's not going to shock me if this game goes the other way. But I'm going to go – I think Penn State will find a way. But Maryland should play well in this game.
Yeah, I'm going to go Penn State, too. I thought Maryland would play well last week, and they got hammered. So I'm going Penn State at home as well. East Carolina at Temple.
I'm going with the East Carolina Pirates. I did see that they are – you said you asked where they were going to be. East Carolina's 23 in the rankings, by the way.
Yes.
So I'll take the Pirates.
And I think they're actually up to about 17 or 18 in the AP.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'll take East Carolina as well. This game shouldn't be close.
I agree. All right. Number 3, Villanova at number 14, Richmond. This is a tough game.
Villanova. Taking them right through the season.
Yeah, me too. Taking Villanova.
I'm going to take them just because I just feel like I have to, but I wouldn't be surprised Richmond knocks them off. All right, money time. Number 4, Auburn at number 7, Ole Miss.
I am going with Auburn.
I am going to follow suit and take Auburn. Ole Miss is a little banged up on defense, and Auburn is playing really well right now. And schematically, I think they have a pretty good advantage in this one, so I'm going to take Auburn to beat Ole Miss.
I am as well. I went with Ole Miss last week, and I'm done with them. They let me down. They only scored 7 points. All right, number 10, TCU, as we mentioned, who scores 100 points a game, at number 20, West Virginia.
Good game.
Over 155 for sure.
Yeah, right. Total, definitely take the over.
Yep, I got to take TCU in this game.
Yeah, I like West Virginia, and as we talked about last week, it's a very tough place to play, but I think TCU's playing some really good football. They're one quarter away from being undefeated right now, so I'll go TCU as well.
Yeah, I have to, too. I mean, we're all going the same here, but I just can't see how West Virginia can stop them.
Yep.
All right, number 14, Arizona, and number 25, UCLA.
I'm going to go with the Wildcats of Arizona in this game. This UCLA has let me down way too much this year.
Yeah, UCLA's not playing really good football right now, but I think being at home, I think they're using Jack a little bit more there at the running back position, which they've kind of struggled there a little bit with some injuries, so I'm actually going to take UCLA at home. I hate to do that, but I'm going to take UCLA.
He's trying to steal one, Keith.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with Arizona because UCLA still can't pass protect, so there's no reason to think they're going to be any better at it this week than they have for the last 9. So I'm going Arizona. All right, number 18, Utah, at number 15, Arizona State. Utah's got a good team.
Hey, right now, Utah has beaten Michigan, USC, and UCLA this year.
Yep, good team.
Correct?
Yep.
Am I right?
Yes.
Am I right saying that? That's 3 marquee programs they've taken down, so I'm going to go with the Utes.
Utah's—they're a really good team. I think this is probably the best coaching matchup in the Pac-12. I think these two coaches are the best in the business there out west. I really believe that. So both of those guys, Willingham and Graham at Arizona State. I mean, those guys can coach. I like Arizona State at home. I mean, they are seemingly getting better each week. Their quarterback's back. Kelly's back. I think Arizona State will win this game.
Well, I took Utah last week against USC, and they did the job, so I am going to go with them again on the road. By the way, do you know, and I need to check this to be sure I'm right, but do you know who I think the running back coach is at Utah? Dennis Erickson.
Is he the offensive coordinator as well?
I just think he's a running back coach, but he's definitely on the staff out there as an assistant.
Yeah, he is.
Not a bad guy to have as your assistant. He did pretty well for himself.
Yeah, I thought he was the offensive coordinator as well. I could be wrong, but yeah, he is on the. I believe you're right. He is on the staff out there.
Yeah.
That's a good team.
Yeah, I tossed this bonus game in here just because I think it's one that maybe you could throw the numbers out on. So we'll see where we go with it. Stanford at number 5, Oregon.
I like the game. Oh, I always enjoy watching Stanford play because they do play a smash mouth game. But, I mean, Oregon is just, you know, Oregon's going to be a little upset about this week. So I think they're going to really put it to Stanford. So I'm going to go with the Ducks.
Yeah,
is your woodshed
right.
game? Is this your woodshed game this week?
Is this my woodshed game? I will say it's my woodshed game, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to go with
Keith. Woodshed games.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to Oregon. Oregon struggled the last couple of years with Stanford, but this Stanford team is not that Stanford team that they've seen the last couple of years. Offensively, Stanford is challenged. They're very challenged. So I'm going to go Oregon as well, and I don't think it's going to be – I think we're looking at a 14-point game.
Okay. I'm going to go Oregon as well. So, Keith, you're not gaining any ground because I think me and you went right down the line together here. So,
that's how you're going to play it, I see, huh? All right.
Actually, even though these games are against ranked teams, I'm not seeing them being as close to games as the rankings show as they were a handful of weeks ago. I think you're starting to see the separation among some of these teams in my mind.
Yeah.
The woodshed game for me is not one that's on our list, but I think Georgia-Florida – has a chance to be a bad woodshed game.
Yeah, that might be the kiss of death for our friend Will Muschamp. That might be the dagger.
Yep. And
you know,
I tell you what, if that's
the head coach says, "Hey, we're going to bunker up here and play this game, and we're going to bunker down and then play this game," that just means, okay, I don't want to hear anybody talk. I know I'm fired. That's my last shot.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of Georgia people that I know that are scared to death of this game just for exactly that reason. And there was an article that came out that Muschamp saying that we've got that bunker mentality. Exact words he used.
Well,
so he's trying to circle the wagons.
Well, yep. The young guy is going to start at quarterback for them this week. So that maybe that'll provide a spark for the offense.
I don't think so. But we'll see. Georgia always manages to lose one. So I'm going Georgia in my woodshed game of the week.
So, there you go.
All right. Well, we got our picks in. We'll catch our Heisman next week. I'm sure we'll, after the weekend, we'll have a lot more to talk about with there's going to be more upsets. There always are, and it'll be fun to watch again. And hopefully that Auburn-Ole Miss game won't disappoint. So we'll talk more about that next week. But that brings us to the top of our hour, and we'd like to thank our sponsor, www.southbeachshopping.com, as well as my partners, Terry House and Nagoon, Keith Conlon, for their great insight. We'd like to remind our listeners that we will be back next Tuesday night, November 4th at 7 p.m., to talk about last weekend's game as well as the upcoming week. You can listen to our podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show.